This is the Sports Animals.
Welcome back to another episode of the Sports Animals. It's been a little bit hairy, but we're ready to talk New York Yankees baseball and for the New York Yankees postseason run. How you doing, Harry?
Mike, it is great to speak with you again. I'm loving this 2019 Yankees run, and I can't wait for some October baseball. It's just around the corner.
Well, it's been sort of boring for the last month and a half because it's been a foregone conclusion ever since the Yankees spanked the Red Sox at home in a four-game sweep to knock them out of the division in the AL East. And they haven't had much to play for other than home field advantage, which we'll talk a little bit more about on this episode and what's coming in the next couple of weeks that we can prepare for before the postseason begins. But Harry, before we do that, we have to have a very sad conversation, and I think you know what this is about.
Oh, boy. Not my boy.
It's your boy. I will remember you. Harry, Mike Tauchman.
You will remember me.
Mike Tauchman is out for the season, your boy. And we got to let you bask in your own glory a little bit from our preseason predictions because you kind of nailed it, dude.
Oh, I remember throughout the whole course of the season, I kept on bringing up, hey, Tauchman got called up. I was shocked that he actually was on the team after I made that bold prediction. And he just started raking slowly but surely. You kept on saying, oh, who cares about Tauchman, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, you doubled down on him being a nobody. And now we may have another Luke Voit character. This guy could be an impact player for this team for years to come. And this is a guy who was not a career. What, he had like 60 at-bats in his career. He batted 94 for the Colorado Rockies last year. I mean, three hits in an extended tryout with the Rockies. So he was garbage last year. But Brian Cashman did his ninja move, and I knew there was something there. This is a guy's a great athlete, untapped potential, great triple-A numbers. Brian Cashman sees something.
Look, Tauchman was a really fun story this year, and he was very, very fun to root for. But the difference between Tauchman and Luke Voit, not to dance on your grave here, as he's not going to have a single postseason at bat, but his underlying statistics, his BABIP and his exit velo and the kinds of statistics that seem to correlate well with repeat performances don't match the peripherals in terms of batting average and slugging percentage. So The sabermetrics numbers suggest that it is unlikely that Tauchman does this again, but it was a very magical ride, and we do let you both bask in the glory of your preseason prediction.
Oh, I'd love to bask in my glory. You know what? Speaking of which, I have that clip of the bold prediction right here. That's
yes.
Would you like to listen to it? Would you like to listen to it? Oh yeah, let's listen to it.
Little sidebar here: the Mike Tauchman trade, which we have not discussed. I think this is going to – maybe this should be my bold prediction.
Oh,
you know what? This could be interesting. Mike Tauchman is going to be the Luke Voit of this year. He's not going to play the full season, but he's going to put a good month and a half in where he is raking for the Yankees. This guy – everyone should Google the definitive Mike Tauchman hype piece on Roto, on Fangraphs. It is a great piece that says this guy is really a hidden gem. This was written a few weeks before the Yankees traded for him. This guy is 28 years old. He was on the Colorado Rockies. The Yankees traded Phil Deal for him, who was a kind of a left-handed reliever. Was a little he was a depth piece for the Yankees. He was never going to get meaningful innings there. The Yankees have a ton of arms, just like Phil Deal. They traded him for an outfielder because Aaron Hicks is banged up. Clint Frazier clearly hasn't fully recovered from his concussion yet. The Yankees needed a filler for outfield. But I think this guy is a really impressive young hitter. I think he's going to be Luke Voit, a late blossoming guy, a Charlie Blackman type who started blossoming late in his 20s. He's got high contact skills, 3 years at AAA, he has been been absolutely raking. And he's got great power numbers. They keep on increasing. Good defender, can play all three outfield positions. I love this pickup. Look, if you look at the comps for his minor league numbers, the numbers that come up, Charlie Blackman, Lorenzo Cain, I'm not saying he's going to be those guys, but this is the type of player that the Yankees are so good at unearthing. They did it with Didi Gregorius. They did it with Aaron Hicks. They've done it over and over again. Luke Voit. They keep on finding these diamonds in the rough, and I think this could be another candidate that no one is talking about. Look, in Cashman we trust, and I'll go
through. Oh, wow. Look at you.
Okay. All right. Here we
go. I could go on if you like.
Spin zone, Harry. You're a real son of a bitch, and I'll tell you why. Because your prediction was actually too accurate. You said that he will not finish the season with the Yankees. He'll play about a month and a half. Well, he played more than a month and a half. But one could argue, based on that bold prediction, that you hexed him. Are you responsible for ending Mike Talkman's season? I mean, that's the real question that we have to be asking at this point.
Oh, yeah. Way to spin this away from my glory of making hard-hitting analysis that you can't find anywhere else except for the Sports Animals. Well, you're, doing another hot take. I'm digging deep, finding the next Mike Talkman. That's what you listen to the Sports Animals for.
I'm just saying, you may have ended Mike Talkman's season, and you don't feel any guilt about that whatsoever.
You know, if you look at the top five players on the Yankees in WAR this season, you start with MVP candidate DJ LeMahieu, Aaron Judge, of course, perennial high WAR player. Gleyber Torres having a breakout year at 4.2 WAR. Brett Gardner, love the renaissance year he's having, 3.8 WAR. And right there, in limited playing time, higher than Gio Urshela, higher than Gary Sanchez, higher than Luke Voit, is my boy, Talkman the Salkman. I mean, this guy, he exceeded my expectations. But of all the bold predictions I made, I mean, this is one of the all-time great takes.
Huh. Yeah, it was probably the only one who was accurate, too. So good for you. Very pleased with your prediction, Harry. That was very, very well done.
I'm sorry. I'm just opening a beer because it's actually a Henry Hops from McKellar Brewing. I went to a Mets-Dodgers game this weekend and picked up some of this beer. And I'd like to just pour this one out for Mike Talkman.
And I am broadcasting once again on the road from a hotel room in Tampa Bay, Florida this evening. And so I am enjoying a Cigar City Jai Alai pale ale or something like that. It's good and it's nice and cold and the air conditioning is really nice because Florida is really hot as it always is. And I try not to spend a lot of time outside when it's that hot in Florida. So cheers to Cigar City.
Cheers to Mike Talkman.
Cheers to Mike Talkman. It's a real shame that he's not going to be on that postseason roster due to injury. He's been a really important piece for that team. And all of a sudden, an outfield where you were wondering which guys they were going to carry now looks pretty thin with the injury to Aaron Hicks. And so the sort of maybe it will, maybe it won't return of Giancarlo Stanton is looming over this team now as they try to make a preparations for a postseason run.
Yeah, all of a sudden this outfield is looking rather thin. And I'm here to say that Mike Talkman, I'm going to make another Mike Talkman bold prediction. This guy is going to have a big hit or a big catch in a World Series game. For the New York Yankees, I think 6 to 8 weeks. He could come back for the World Series. This guy is a gamer. He's gonna rehab like crazy, and he's gonna get back, and he's gonna make an impact on that World Series roster. So you heard her here first, just like you heard Mike Talkman's name for the first time on this podcast. World Series hero, Talkman the Sockman.
You know, gamblers usually get in trouble when they double down, Harry. You should probably just quit when you're ahead.
I'm putting it all on black.
If you want to keep going with Mike Talkman Appreciation Hour, you can. I was going to move on to other outfield positions with the postseason. Go ahead, Harry.
I'd just like to point out that your bold predictions were one of the worst teams in baseball, the Baltimore Orioles, the Yankees are going to beat up on them this year. And wow, you were right. They were like, oh, what a bold prediction over there. I've been unearthing AAA players who no one has ever heard of and saying they're going to be impact players on the Yankees and nailing it. And like, you got to step up your game, Mike.
I take that as a challenge, and that is absolutely fair. My bold predictions did not net out this year, but that's what makes them bold, Harry. You got to take big swings.
Got to take big swings. Well, maybe we'll do a postseason bold prediction show next week or something. Maybe you can.
So let me try to redeem myself with a bold prediction to get us going, because I mentioned this to you over the weekend as you and I were together celebrating a friend from college's wedding. And my new bold prediction is not a particularly cheerful one, but with the latest injury to Aaron Hicks, I'd like to predict that the Yankees are going to come to regret the extension that they gave him in this past offseason. And I'm happy to elaborate on it some more, but Harry, I'm really down on Aaron Hicks after the season that he just had and the latest injury that he just suffered.
I think you're jumping on a guy who just has been banged up all year. He had a great year last year. He's a great defender, and I think you got to see when he's healthy again. I know that hasn't been healthy the last year and a half, but this guy's too good a player. They didn't even pay him that much money. What is it, 7 years, $70 million? He put 1.2 WAR in 220 at-bats this year, so he was still able to contribute to the team. It's not like he was a nobody. And he's still relatively young. He's got to get healthy. There's no doubt. He's got to get healthy.
Look, my problem is not that Hicks was banged up this year. My problem is that Hicks is banged up every year. The guy is 29 years old now. He came into the league in 2013. His career high in games is 137. He's only ever played 100 games in a season twice. This year he's played 59 games. He will not play another regular season game. Last year was his career high. He played 137 games. The year before that, he played 88 games. The year before that, 123. Prior to that, he'd never played 100 games in a season. This guy is hurt every single year. Even when you get him for 137 games, he's going to be on the IL for weeks at a time. And I think that when you compare that, and I think this is fair in some ways and not fair in some other ways, right? Because for Aaron Hicks, the narrative is always, well, if only he were healthy, you know, he's a true, whatever you want to say, you know, 250, 330, 450 hitter. If he's healthy, right? Like if he's healthy, he's a guy who can hit for power, hit for average, get on base, and steal some bases, right? Problem is that he's never healthy, and he's a great defender. Problem is he's never healthy. And when he produces, he does it in spurts because he doesn't stay on the field to play through injuries. Now you compare that to Brett Gardner, whose overall numbers may not be as good as Aaron Hicks when Aaron Hicks is playing at his best. Brett Gardner has already played 130 games this season. He'll finish with well over 140 games this season. And the last time he played fewer than 137 games was 2012, when he suffered a torn ulnar collateral ligament in his arm. Prior to that, he had not played fewer than 137 games since 2009. That guy plays every single game. And when you play through bumps and bruises, sometimes your performance is going to suffer a little bit, and that's going to impact your numbers. And Aaron Hicks is not a guy who is willing to go out there and compete when he's not 100%. And so the whole, well, if he's healthy thing is nonsense, because Aaron Hicks is never healthy. He doesn't have the ability.
Your point, but I think Gardner is a special case that we take for granted. This guy is just a great player year in and year out. I'm so excited that at age 36, he was able to earn himself a contract. That there's no way the Yankees don't re-sign him. I mean, he's having an excellent, excellent year. And, you know, that second half slump that we've always talked about with Gardner, where he seems like he plays too much and he gets tired down the stretch, we're not seeing that this year. He's still playing extremely well. He's at 25 home runs this year. Insane. So you know, I'm so excited that Brett Gardner is going to be part of this team again next year and be a big contributor in the playoffs. So, yes, we're a little spoiled by Brett Gardner, a guy who plays 150 games, you know, every single year. Those players are dying. Like,
are we spoiled by Brett Gardner, though? Because he's not regarded as one of the best center fielders in baseball. And that's how Aaron Hicks is being paid, right? We're not paying for Aaron Hicks to be an average or slightly above average outfielder. He's being paid like a premium asset. He's being paid more than Brett Gardner was being paid in the prime of his career. So why is it then that Brett Gardner is underappreciated from an economic standpoint and Aaron Hicks is over? I don't get it. I mean, the numbers don't add up on the performance of those two players.
Yeah, I think you want guys with high upside, and Aaron Hicks has the talent and has shown like at times that he can be a superstar level player. I think last year there was some times when you're like, wow, this guy can hit with 372 on base percentage and a 475 slugging. Like, that is impressive. He hit 27 home runs last year in limited playing time. You don't really find that amongst great defending center fielders. So I think that's what the Yankees went with. And they decided to give him less annual money, but more years. And yeah. I think it's easy to get on him this year because it was kind of a disappointment after a big year. But I'm willing to see this contract play out, and I want to revisit this in 2 or 3 years, of course.
Yeah, I mean, you have to revisit it in 2 or 3 years because they've signed him to a long extension. But I am worried that some of the ability that Aaron Hicks lacks is availability. And I guess I kind of feel bad about, you know, doing this while he's down again, but it does strike me that this is a potential issue with this player going forward. That, and look, I'm not saying that he's soft or that he should be playing through the injury that he's suffering right now. I'm not a doctor. I don't know anything about the injury that he is dealing with right now. But he's either very unlucky or very injury prone or not willing to play through bumps and bruises or all three. And no matter which way you slice it, you know, guys like Nick Johnson just aren't that valuable, over the course of their careers. And Aaron Hicks has the potential to wind up being one of those Nick Johnson type guys.
I don't think we're at the Greg Bird level yet. A guy that had a 45 game stretch that was really impressive. And then 3 years of injuries where he can't stay on the field and he doesn't perform when he's on the field. This is very different. This is a guy who put together a season and a half of really impressive numbers, and played half a season this year, a little less, and looked promising. So, it's disappointing how his year has turned out. If he's banged up again next year, maybe we can start having this conversation, but I'm still optimistic.
All right, fair enough. So where does that leave the Yankees outfield for the postseason, Harry? And what do you think about the Giancarlo Stanton situation?
Yeah, I'm very excited to get Giancarlo Stanton back. I don't know what certain Yankee fans on Twitter are saying that we don't need this guy, because now we definitely need him.
That's insane that people are saying that.
I mean, this guy is an unbelievable world-class talent. He had a really good year last year. Maybe not a 59 home run MVP season, but he was a really good player for the Yankees in his first year. I think people remember his ALDS that was, you know, he had 2 or 3 games that were particularly awful. And, you know, he should be accountable for that. But this is a guy you want in your lineup every day. He just can absolutely destroy the ball. And that, to me, this is the storyline to watch. Which of these three players can return to form quickly, and can they contribute down the stretch and get ready for the postseason? Severino, Betances, and Giancarlo Stanton. I think if those guys get healthy for real, this team is a World Series bound team. If not, I'm not so sure.
To switch gears a little bit, what we saw from Dellin Betances yesterday was very encouraging, right?
Yes, definitely. I mean, his fastball velocity was down, but that's what you should expect from a guy who, you know, hasn't pitched in months. I think, what was he average? He usually averages 98 miles per hour. Yesterday, it was around 94, 95. So his velocity was down, but his spin rate looked good. And he was, you know, he did really well in his first outing. So you got to build up his arm strength a bit. It's basically spring training for the guy. And I think he can be a huge addition to this already deep bullpen.
So what are you watching for when he makes his trips to the mound over the next 2 weeks?
Yeah, I'm looking for command is a big one. You know, I really want to see that. You know how Betances is. He can get wild sometimes and just start walking everyone. But you want him to see the progress in the right direction. You want him to build up velocity. You want him to limit his walks. You want to make sure that the spin rate is there, comparable to last year. So those are the things I'm kind of watching. And I just want to see that he looks full strength. I don't even care about the numbers that much, as long as the stuff and the command are there.
So what wouldn't you care about from a numbers perspective? If he gets hit hard, is that something that's not going to bother you?
Yeah.
Here's a question. Would walks bother you more, or would it bother you more if he was giving up a lot of hard contact?
I think if he was trending in the wrong direction, like his velocity was, he couldn't, like he was, what was he, 94, 95? If all of a sudden he was throwing 92, then it would be a concern, because then you have to be a very different pitcher if you can't build up to your normal arm strength. You know, I look at the quality of the contact, sure. You want to see a guy who can miss bats. He's a great strikeout pitcher. Does he still have that strikeout stuff? You know, but if he gives up a home run here, a home run there, or something like that, it's okay. I mean, it's spring training again. Like, I never look at spring training numbers. I look at the player's overall stuff, and if he looks comfortable out there.
And I mean, in spring training, that's fine because you've got a lot of time to build your stuff before the season starts. Obviously, we don't have a lot of time until really meaningful baseball gets started for Dellin Betances. If he's throwing at 93, 94 right now, we obviously want to see that velocity trending in the right direction. Where does it need to be when the postseason gets started? So for instance, let's suppose for a second that Betances isn't touching the 97, 98 numbers that we know he can get to and beyond when he really dials it up. Let's suppose he's sitting around 95, 96 heading into the postseason. All of a sudden, does then the underlying performance matter a lot more if his velocity and his stuff aren't what we're used to seeing that it is? So in other words, if we know that Dellin Betances is not throwing the same pitches that he was throwing last year, should we be paying more attention to whether or not teams are touching that stuff if that velocity is not going to be the same?
Yeah, it's interesting. I was trying to think about ranking which of the Yankees' recent returns is most important down the stretch. Is it Severino, Betances, or Giancarlo Stanton? I think that's pretty clear. I think Sevy's got to be the most important, right? Sevy's got to be the most important.
Yeah, I don't think it's close either. I think it's got to be Sevy's the most important. I think tomorrow night when Sevy comes back to the mound is maybe the most important baseball game that the Yankees have played since the All-Star break. And I don't think that's hyperbole either. That is a really important game for them tomorrow night to see what he's got.
Right. Yeah, it's his first game back, and starters take longer to build up arm strength. So, I mean, how many starts does he have? Maybe three?
Well, that's exactly the thing, right? I mean, normally you would never invest so much into the first start that a guy has coming back, but the Yankees just are not going to get a lot of looks at him before they have to make a decision about where they're going to slot him in their postseason rotation. So every start is really important. Whether he gets two or three, you're not going to get a lot of evidence about how he looks against major league hitting before the postseason starts. So if he goes out tomorrow and pitches a dud, now you could dismiss that and say, hey, it's his first start back, nothing to worry about, let's see the next one. By contrast, if he goes out and pitches a gem tomorrow night, wow, you can really breathe a deep sigh of relief, because then you at least know he has that in him. You know that he's capable of that.
Yes.
And that would be a huge, huge sigh of relief for Yankee fans and for Yankee management. So, you know, it's a little bit of a weird one because if he doesn't throw a great start tomorrow, they're going to shake it off and say, well, we'll see how he is in the next one. And they'll play it off like it's not a big deal. And frankly, it's not that big of a deal. You wouldn't expect him to be a world beater in his first start back with limited minor league action. That being said, if he does go out and instill a whole bunch of confidence in you tomorrow, boy, what a big deal that would be.
Oh, 100%. I'm so excited to have our ace back. I mean, this guy was such a stud for us last year, and the Yankees desperately need starting pitching. I mean, James Paxton has been pitching really well lately, but you don't have real confidence in handing the ball to any of the other Yankee starters. I think we have enough offense and a deep enough bullpen to overcome the lack of starting pitching, but Severino is a real boost to that rotation if he is the Severino of old. So I agree. That's the number one guy that I'm watching really closely tomorrow. I'm actually going to the game. Very excited. And
big deal.
Stanton, to me, Stanton is number two. I think Stanton is such a good – is that good a player? And I know the Yankees have a great offense as it is. They've been able to put a huge amount of runs and home runs on the board while he's been gone. But this guy's an MVP caliber player. And if you stick him in the lineup and he's that type of player, he can carry you for a month. So Betances of the three is kind of a nice cherry on top. But to me, this is the least important of the returning big players.
I think that's fair. And I think on the Stanton thing too, he's important largely because the Yankees have demonstrated to you that they have absolutely no confidence in Clint Frazier.
What is the deal with that?
I don't really get it either. It's a really strange thing, but they seem just totally averse to playing that guy.
I don't understand it because he was very impressive earlier in the season. I think it was a 121 weighted runs created plus, like way above league average, and he's a very good young player. It's a little surprising that they haven't played him since Tuchman has been injured. They really haven't thrown him out there every day. Thought they'd give him a real audition, but clearly they think that next year is the year that Frazier comes of age, or maybe they'll trade him. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think that's clear at all. I don't think that the Yankees have a great deal of faith in Clint Frazier, and I frankly would be really surprised to see him on the roster next season. I think he is almost definitely going to be dealt in the offseason the way that they are behaving with Clint Frazier's playing time.
And then who else are you going to play if it's not Stanton? It has to be Cameron Maybin.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's Judge, Gardner, and Cameron Maybin are the three guys that they have demonstrated the most faith in. And I think they keep talking about the fact that they want Giancarlo Stanton to come back. So I think that's their plan. I mean, at least that's what it seems like to me.
Yeah, I mean, Maybin's had a really nice bounce back year for, you know, 32-year-old vet. He's a great clubhouse guy, solid defender, got some pop. So he's put together a really nice season for the Yankees, but I don't want to run him out every day in the postseason. We really need Stanton in there. I think that gives our lineup so much more depth, so much more firepower, and I think it's the biggest net gain of all the biggest injuries out there besides Severino.
Yeah, I don't really understand the – so I completely agree with you. They need Stanton back. But it's also – they're so cagey about Stanton's updates in terms of when he might be coming back. The thing that makes the least sense to me this season is why they haven't given Clint Frazier more of an opportunity. Since September call-ups, this guy has only 21 at-bats. And granted, he's not playing well. He's hitting .143 since being called up. But – it's just not enough at bats. I mean, they need to give this guy. I don't see a better option for them than Clint Frazier, and so, for some reason, they seem averse to giving this guy opportunities to prove himself. They're making it harder for him to make a contribution by not giving him opportunities at the end of this season. Now, maybe I'm rooting too hard for Clint Frazier, but I mean, the reality is that we've just seen things out of him that have demonstrated that he could make a contribution at the major league level. For some reason, you know, I don't know what it is. I think it might be a makeup thing. The Yankees just don't like him.
Yeah, it's very strange. I actually don't see them trading him this offseason because I think he's weirdly, despite having a really good major league audition earlier in the season, I think his stock is pretty low right now. I think the Yankees just have mismanaged him a bit, and if they're trying to pump up his trade value, it's really not there right now. Yeah, so we'll see, but I just don't see Clint Frazier making the postseason roster this year.
So here's some analysis that you won't get on a major radio network because they're too timid to make the hot takes, Harry. So let me lay some.
Oh boy, here it comes.
I think that if you pay attention to Clint Frazier's social media, there may be some things going on with that guy that are the reasons that the Yankees are cagey about him. So he recently scrubbed his entire Instagram, right? So now he only has like 3 or 4 pictures up there, and most of them are of him with cats.
Ooh, which we I have didn't
to,
see that.
We got to question a cat guy off the bat, but it's just him and his cat in most of his photos. Now, that's neither here nor there, but cat guys, you know, you got to worry about it. And then if you follow him on Twitter, he tweets these really weird, nonsensical, cryptic things that drive Yankees Twitter absolutely bonkers because they don't know what he's talking about, and everybody reads weird things into it and tries to extrapolate meaning from these nonsensical tweets that he sends. And maybe just toying with people, but I also think that he might be just like a weird dude. And if that's the window that he's showing to the world, maybe the side that the Yankees see on the inside is equally as weird or somehow concerning to them, and that's why they've determined that, you know, they don't want him on the team or in the clubhouse. Maybe he's a bad clubhouse fit. And we know for a fact that Cashman felt that one of the biggest issues under the Girardi tenure was the clubhouse fit. He wanted the clubhouse to be looser. He wanted to have leaders on the team. He wanted to have players that were stepping up as leaders. He wanted to have a manager that empowered players to make their own decisions and to be leaders within the clubhouse. So,
I've been reading the book you recommended, Inside the Empire.
Yeah, it was really good. I really enjoyed it.
It does not make Torrey or Girardi look very good, though.
No, it doesn't. And it makes it clear that that's what Cashman wanted. And so if that's the case, maybe I'm making a big jump, but maybe I'm not. Maybe it's just about his defense and I'm just reading into nothing. But maybe there is a makeup thing there that the Yankees are concerned about, and maybe they do really care about that. I'm not sure.
I don't know. I know that the Yankees had no plan to play Clint Frazier very much this year. They came into the season with the plan he needed a year of extra development. Perhaps could have his defense, or perhaps they know something that we don't. That was the plan. He was thrust into playing, and then he played really well, and it kind of put the Yankees in a tough place. Like, oh man, we got to play this guy more often. I don't know. Maybe they're just steadfast on their development plan, and they really want to give this guy an extra year of development. Not sure. But to me, this is like the good news is that there's been so many Yankees that have stepped up, and they have enough firepower to keep winning without Clint Frazier, as long as they can get Stanton back. Because, I mean, objectively, first of all, Stanton, such a great player when he's on the field. But also, objectively, Cameron Maybin has been much better this year than Clint Frazier, especially the second half. I mean, they haven't given Frazier enough opportunities, but Maybin's been a real contributor. And if I had to pick between the two for the postseason roster, I'd pick Maybin.
I don't know that that's necessarily a fair comparison, because before that Boston series where Clint Frazier booted the 3 balls in the outfield and the Yankees essentially ostracized him and sent him out to the, you know, banished island of Elba. He was hitting extremely well, right? So to say, okay, well, you know, his season numbers don't really stack up when he's only gotten sporadic opportunities since that sort of banishment that he had. I don't know. I'm not sure that that's totally fair. I really don't. Like it is. It's playing counterfactuals to say that we know how Clint Frazier would have performed if he was given the same opportunity this year.
Yeah, but That's true. But Cameron Maybin, facts are facts. You look at his numbers, 215 at bats. He's got a 357 on base percentage, good defense. I mean, the guy's been a hell of a contributor this year. So I just don't see how you can play Frazier after he's been slumping so much since he's been called up.
Yeah, he hasn't played well in September. But then again, they haven't given him regular at-bats. And guys that are everyday players, when they're not given regular at-bats, I mean, you can kind of just throw the numbers out in some ways. It's not really fair to evaluate players on that basis. We saw that with Aaron Hicks, right? We just to circle this back to Aaron Hicks at the beginning of this conversation. When the Yankees first picked up Aaron Hicks from the Twins, they were not giving him everyday outfield opportunities. They were playing him every other day or every third day as they could fit him into the lineup. And the guy was batting like 100 in his first year in pinstripes, and everybody wanted him out. Then Brian Cashman forced him into the lineup despite poor performance, and we saw a turn. And that is something that is unique to baseball that you're not going to see in other sports. And it really does have to do with the routinization of this sport and the fact that guys are going to play differently when they have the job security, where they know that every plate appearance that they're going up there, they don't have to worry about getting their next plate appearance because they can they feel empowered to take a big swing. And they feel that they are going to be able to have the opportunity to come back to the plate the next time when the order comes around and it's supposed to be their turn to bat. And I think that's a big difference in terms of the confidence of a player. And I think that's a big difference in terms of the ability of a player to prepare in a different way for the grind of a Major League Baseball season. And what do I know? I've never played a Major League Baseball season, but the evidence from a statistical standpoint seems to demonstrate that those guys do benefit from regular at-bats.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, you've been very negative today for a team that's competing for the best record in baseball. And well, Harry, getting three of the best players back on their team that haven't played all season. I mean, did you have a bad day at work, Mike?
No.
What's the deal, Harry? I'm worried about it.
I just got done reading Mission 27. And I got all pumped up. I just enjoyed the hell out of it. Just reading Nick Swisher ranting for page on page about the 2009 World Series team. I downloaded because nobody watches DVDs anymore. I downloaded the 2009 World Series DVD to watch it after I read Mission 27. I got all jacked up. And now I'm watching the Yankees every night going, man, I really hope that they get a home field advantage. And I got, we bought our postseason tickets. We're all ready to rock and roll for the ALDS and the ALCS. And I need to get to an equilibrium, Harry, because if I get it all too excited, and we get it, go out and get beat by the Twins, I don't know what I'm going to do. It's not something I can handle. I'm not emotionally prepared for that. So I got to be a little bit negative just to level out the excitement that I have about this team.
Yeah, I understand where you're coming from, but this is a special team here. I mean, they have overcome so much adversity, so many unsung heroes, so many guys just stepping up and being big contributors. You got to get excited here. I know it's going to be a tough postseason, and anything can happen in the postseason. What's interesting is this is a particularly top-heavy class of teams as well. Like, Minnesota Twins are a very good baseball team. So are the Oakland A's. Obviously, the Houston Astros. It's going to be a tough road any way you slice it. There's no, 520 teams that are sneaking in this year at the AL. So no, the Yankees aren't. Are going to have stiff competition, whoever they
are. Yeah, and we'll do a postseason preview show, particularly when we get a little bit closer to the end of the road here and we know exactly where the Yankees are in terms of postseason seeding. And we'll talk about the postseason roster on that episode as well. The way to encapsulate this is the best chance that the Yankees have had at winning a World Series since 2009. They are still the third favorite, according to Vegas, right? So if you were a gambling man, there are two teams who have better odds than the Yankees right now to win the World Series. So as good as their chances are of making a deep postseason run, there is at least one team in the AL and one team in the NL that is favorite above them right now.
I gotta say, I went to the Mets Dodgers this past weekend, and this is a very small sample size, but I was kind of unimpressed with the Dodgers. I was looking through the lineup, No, it didn't have a ton of firepower. I mean, they got Jock Peterson, Max Muncy. Obviously, Cody Bellinger is having an MVP-like season. But I always get worried with teams that put too much on one guy to carry the offense, because if that guy gets cold, then who's going to pick up the slack? You know, Justin Turner's hurt too. But to me, they didn't – I think teams and Dodger teams in the past have actually had more firepower, and I've been than this one. So, if yes, they're a very good team. Yes, they're going to be up there in terms of the best record in baseball. But I'm more concerned about the Astros. That pitching staff paired with that offense and defense, that's a really good team that could beat the Yankees easily. If the Yankees make it to the World Series, I am very confident against the Los Angeles Dodgers.
Well, so I think that you're not wrong there, but the Dodgers have some urgency that I think is on their side. The Dodgers are at real risk of becoming the Buffalo Bills of the MLB.
You're absolutely right. Could not get over the hill. What did the Bills make? Four straight Super Bowls? Three?
They made four straight Super Bowls. They did not win a single one of them. The Dodgers have been in each of the last two World Series. They did not win either of them. And I think that they are the odds-on favorite in the National League to make the World Series this year, but they're not the favorites to win the World Series this year. So you could easily have a situation where the Dodgers have made three consecutive World Series appearances without a World Series victory.
Yeah, there's a lot of pressure on them. Clayton Kershaw's getting older. They do have a young core Cody Bellinger is having a ridiculous season. I mean, this guy is no doubt he's going to win the MVP award now that Yelich is hurt. But he's put together a great season. And they do have a really good young core to build around. But, you know, it's very hard to continuously go back to the World Series. And you got to win one if you just keep getting there over and over again.
I'm with you on that. I'm getting pumped up, dude. I'm very excited for this World Series. I can't say World Series. I'm getting very excited for the postseason.
Yeah, you're jumping ahead of yourself there. Well, now that we don't have Talkman watch, because my bold prediction was so spot on, we should do a DJ LeMahieu watch for the rest of the season, because he is right in the thick of a batting title race. Could be the first guy in history to win the batting title in both the AL and the NL. And he's sitting in at 328, just behind Tim Anderson at 332, which is kind of Tim Anderson, first of all, nowhere near as good a player as DJ LeMahieu this year. He's got no power, pretty average defender. But he's also has almost the same number of bats as Gio Urshela. He's like at 470 plate appearances. So LeMahieu has a higher average and more at bats. I think LeMahieu could definitely catch him. LeMahieu's been in a slump lately, but he had a good weekend in terms of hitting. I think if he snaps out of his recent rut, he could put together some really good games, and I think he could reach this.
The fact that you care about the batting title for batting average is a demonstration, Harry, that as analytically minded as you may be and as analytically minded as you grow every single year, you are still a homer at heart, my friend. And for that, I'll always appreciate you.
Yeah, I'm a hopeless romantic. Sometimes a batting title is just what my heart needs.
Well, so we'll root for DJ LeMahieu. We'll root for Dellin Betances. We'll be paying very, very special attention tomorrow night when Luis Severino takes the mound. Is there anything else that we have to say today, Harry, before we move on to the postseason preview that we'll be recording next week?
I'm very excited for October baseball. It's starting to cool up in the air.
Yeah, feel the leaves just a little turning. Crispness in the air. Wind blowing, leaves changing colors a little bit. A little crisp out in the Bronx.
Getting excited. Oh,
there's nothing better than October baseball. There's nothing better than October baseball. Certainly way better than October Giants football. Goddamn losers.
Yeah, that 0-2 start. Really.
0-2 start. I mean, 0-2 start. They've had an 0-2 start 6 out of the last 7 seasons. Bunch of bums.
This one was against that. The Bills, though. Yeah, oh, man.
Best game in New York.
Talk about it. That's all I got. I'm very excited for the postseason, and I'm going to start preparing for the postseason preview show right now.
My man, Pots and Pans. All right, Harry, we'll be back next week with our New York Yankees postseason preview show. Enjoy the Luis Severino start tomorrow, and let's go Yankees for that home field advantage.
Let's go Yanks.